Well, folks, hell has frozen over. Just every sort of hyperbolic, metaphorical euphemism you can think of has happened. Mayweather, McGregor, somehow it's happening. And on today's show, we've got none other than Mike Coughlin of HalfGuarded.com, website I write for quite frequently, here to kind of talk to us about where things went horribly, horribly right in this entire predicament. So, Mr. Coughlin, if you want to introduce yourself, go ahead and just let's get straight into it.
Well, I mean, I'm the kind of man that needs no introduction. I think that's clear by now to everybody out there in radio listening land or YouTube listening land or podcast listening land, however it works these days with the kids. I think it's going to be the biggest money fight of all time. It's scary how much press this thing has already gotten, and we're not even close to the fight actually taking place. I've been joking it's going to be the summer of annoying hot takes, but I really think that we got an entire public who are just dying for anything that is not politics related that they can talk about, and this certainly fits the bill.
I mean, yeah, this has just been an absolutely fantastic summer for fights already. I mean, in boxing, we just had Kovalev and Ward. We got Golovkin and Canelo coming up later on. As far as UFC is concerned, we got John Jones and Daniel Cormier. So this is really sort of the crown jewel of what's really shaping up to be one of the best summers ever for fighting. And I guess, you know, you wrote an article for Half Guarded explicitly stating this fight will never, ever happen. And apparently it's happened. So, you know, where did things take a detour there?
Well, I mean, I had egg on my face. I was keeping a running tally for the past year or so, I think. I think it was almost actually a year about every time somebody's pretending this fight would happen. I never thought it would. I thought there was just too many moving pieces involved, too many egos. But I think, rubber hit the road, and Conor McGregor is not – I don't think he's rich enough that he can turn down a $100 million payday or whatever it might be for him. Even if Floyd gets a little bit more, this is the kind of money that doesn't just change your life or your child's life or your grandkid's life. This is, setting up a dynasty for generations to come level money. And, I guess maybe in the old world before the UFC had been sold, it wouldn't have happened. But the new UFC is a very short-sighted promotion, I think. I think they're willing to hotshot things left and right. It's like Vince Russo got a hold of the book. And so be it. We're going to get a fight that will be the greatest example of all sizzle and no steak.
Or at least, the best one since Pacquiao and Mayweather.
Well, at least those guys went the distance. There's no way this goes the distance.
Ah, yes. We'll get into the meat of that one in just a few minutes. But was it just the money? Did we finally get the proportion of money correct? Was that the catalyst? Or maybe it was Mayweather promotions, seeing the Golovkin and Canelo fight and kind of getting worried. Is this about getting their brand up and running? Or was this a financial thing?
It's all money. And when you get to any high-level fight, anything high-level in any endeavor, it's money that talks at the end of the day. And I think it's really the UFC and Conor came to some sort of agreement about what their split would be. Floyd, I imagine from the outset, said, this is what I'm going to get. I'm not going to deviate. And so it's up to the other two parties to figure out how they're going to negotiate that little roadblock. And I guess they found something that worked for them. And I think it's a credit to the UFC on some level, or really Dana White, that they're willing to let Conor do this, because it's not a lot of upside to the UFC. Yeah, they're going to get a couple hundred, they're going to get tens of millions of dollars. You can't downplay that. But for a company worth supposedly $4.5 billion, they shouldn't be looking at $20 million, $40 million paydays as a big deal. But, it seems like they maybe said, look, this is life-changing money for Conor, and the guy's gone above and beyond for years for us, so what are we going to do? And the cynic in me thinks some part of them did not want to have to deal with any court challenges to the validity of their ability to stop mixed martial artists from doing boxing, and this is their way around that. Either way, I guess it's going to really happen. It's weird because Floyd has actually been the quiet one in all this. It was Conor that came out and announced it. Dana said it. Kevin Ioli. I haven't actually seen a ton from Floyd, and maybe there's more of that in the boxing circles. But it doesn't seem like he's been as active in all this, and he's going to get to notch that 50-0 record in the biggest payday of all time.
You know, it's a very interesting thing we have here because there's so many, like you said, moving pieces. I mean, what was Dana White's role in getting this fight arranged? Obviously, he's not with the UFC anymore, except on a sort of the day-to-day level. But, you know, what was his role?
His role was, I think, advocating for the interests of the WME group as far as how much money they would get from the total pie. I believe Bob Arum was involved. I don't know if Bob Arum was involved. I know Mayweather's involved, and we've seen him over the years as far as the Pacquiao stuff has gone. That went on for 5 years longer than it probably should have. The fact that this came together in realistically about a year says, you know, maybe you can get things done if you're not worried about your ego over 1 or 2 percentage points in a pay-per-view. And, yeah, obviously Conor, the money involved for him, that's the kind of money that I don't know if there's any human being in the world, really any athlete that would turn that down. I mean, you could be Peyton Manning or Tom Brady. If somebody says $100 million for a couple minutes of work, you'd be like, yeah, I'm going to do it. Yeah, that sounds pretty good. What's the downside here? You're going to get all this money. So I think Dana probably thought this might be inevitable. Let's just get it done. And he seems to be kind of cheerleading it. I saw him post on Twitter where he's bragging about the lines, the betting lines already, which is weird. Like, you never see a guy that has a vested interest in promoting a fight, even though he's not technically a promoter, talking about the betting lines like this. So, I feel like there could be this really great behind-the-scenes story of this, or it could just be as simple as everybody involved realized there's just too much money to say no to, and they all said, yeah, we're all going to be super rich. Let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, there's no surprise Dana White started off his career as a boxing promoter, and he's obviously been trying to get back into the field ever since. So do you see maybe this fight being sort of a segue from him moving from UFC back to boxing as a full-time promoter?
Probably not. I don't. He's got his 5% interest, I think, still in the current UFC. He's getting a good paycheck. He's worth all his money from promoting MMA. I think boxing is, despite these occasional outlier fights which do huge business, it's a really difficult business to make money in. I don't think it's conducive to a long-term strategy if you are a promoter. And whereas the UFC, at least until last July when they were bought, was a very stable business model. And, you know, Dana knows MMA. He knows that. He knows the sport. He knows the audience. Boxing is such a crapshoot. We've seen just so many times where boxing promoters go out there and they put on these pay-per-views to get 30,000 buys. Dana White's not going to be involved in that. There's just so much politics there, and Dana's not really a political guy. He's kind of your Donald Trump figure where he just says jump and he expects to hear how high. So I see this as more of a one-off for Dana than anything.
Is there any sort of historical precedent for a fight like this? I mean, obviously you had Muhammad Ali taking on Inoki back in the day. But, no, just off the top of my head, I can't imagine any sort of previous fight like this happening, or even a crossover sporting event, except for maybe Rocky III when Hulk Hogan fought, you know, Rocky.
Well, that, of course, is a legendary encounter. We can't discount the impact, culturally, that Thunderlips had when he fought Rocky. Inoki Ali is the first thing that comes to mind. I'm obviously not Japanese. I'm obviously not a 40-year-old Japanese man, or a 50-year-old Japanese man, so I don't really understand what that probably meant at the time. I suspect that was probably a really big deal culturally. As far as here in the United States, I can't think of anything like this. Let's face it, we've never really had more than one combat sport in this country. Yes, we've had great wrestlers, but nobody ever cared about Dan Gable. Maybe if you lived in Iowa, you did, but nobody else cared about Dan Gable. Not to the level where he would have ever fought, you know, a boxer or anything like that. And other than that, you know, you had the great boxing matches of the 60s, but those were all, you know, Ali Frazier, those were within the confines of boxing. MMA has only been around in the United States since 1993. So this really is unprecedented. And, boxing's going to win this round. We did have James Toney and Randy Couture way back when. It didn't seem to really matter. because I do think that the general public is pretty aware that if a boxer fights MMA, it's a gimme fight. Like, there's no doubt about it. But we've never seen the highest level mixed martial artist do boxing. And so there's still a little bit of mystery there. And I think after August 26th, the mystery will probably be gone. But until that time comes, we get 2 months of fun speculation.
And the opening line when the fight was announced was minus 1,100 for Floyd, plus 700 for Connor. And that sounds pretty high until you remember, wait a minute, Holly Holm was plus 800 in the fight against Ronda Rousey. So
yeah, that was my very first thought, which is, these are not long enough odds. I've seen way longer odds for fights that were way closer. These odds are insane. But you know what? Odds are not based upon reality. They're based upon what people will bet. And the Irish are crazy when it comes to Conor McGregor.
When you look at what Floyd Mayweather has done in his career, he's beat Andre Berto. The last time he even had a split decision against Oscar De La Hoya in 2007. Obviously beat Pacquiao. Beat Juan Manuel Marquez, beat up Mosley, beat Madonna. Not Madonna, but, you know, the boxer, Madonna.
And a couple of women probably named Madonna, but yeah.
And, of course, he had his TKO over his ex-wife, I believe. I can't discount that one. But, yeah, I mean, Floyd, he's arguably the greatest counterpuncher maybe in boxing history, and Conor McGregor got outboxed by Nate Diaz. So does McGregor have even a snowball's chance in hell of even winning a round in this fight?
Yes, because even a snowball starts out as a pack of ice, and a pack of ice can hurt you in the get-go. Eventually, he'll be taken apart. I mean, Floyd is not the greatest ever, but he's definitely the best of his generation, no doubt about it. 49-0, yes, boxing records are always padded far more than they should be. That's still a heck of an accomplishment. He's fought basically everyone you could fight of his generation and largely looked untouchable. Conor's going to be bigger. He does have his left hand. He's a southpaw. Oh, Floyd has trouble with southpaws. But this isn't a real southpaw. This is an amateur boxer in Conor. I'm sure if Conor spent years dedicating himself to boxing, he would be okay at it. I don't see any indication that he'd be this legendary world-class figure. And let's face it, Manny Pacquiao was a legendary left-handed boxer with great power, and Floyd tooled him. And Conor's just a bigger version of Pacquiao with far less skill. But again, you know, anything can happen. Anybody can land a punch. But we've been saying that forever with Floyd. And so, yeah, he's 40. Maybe he's a little older, a little slower. But again, that's so outweighed by the fact that Conor McGregor has never boxed in his life. This is like, it's insane. It's like saying somebody's a great athlete. It's like Michael Jordan going to play baseball. He was the greatest basketball player of all time. He dominated like nobody had ever dominated. And at his peak, he was maybe as good as some 20-year-old also-rans at baseball. And that was, you know, he spent a lot of time doing work in the minors. If he had shown up and just had his first game ever that he ever played was the All-Star game against Roger Clemens, he would have looked stupid. And that's exactly what Conor McGregor's doing. He's going up against Roger Clemens or Randy Johnson in an All-Star game. You don't get a home run off those guys except for on the greatest fluke of all flukes.
So ultimately, what does Mayweather have to gain from this outside of the $100 million payday?
Well, he's going to get $175, I read before, and he gets the 50, it's going to be 50-0 and set the all-time record for passing Rocky Marciano, who's also at 49-0. So you can see he can retire and say, I was 50-0. I was a great boxing hero that conquered that mixed martial artist and made that dumb cage fighting sport look stupid. I solidified the supremacy of the pugilist. And, yeah, he also gets hundreds of millions of dollars. And you can't really, you know, for a guy who I don't think can read and who's going to have a lot of lawsuits in the future, he's going to need that money.
You know, you beat me to the point about him being illiterate. I couldn't wait to drop that joke later on, but all right, I can just move along. But you know, in boxing and MMA, we hear those two dangerous words, puncher's chance. If somehow Conor McGregor wins this fight, how will he do it?
Oh, he'll drop him with a left hand that stuns everybody. And it'll be such a big moment. If he actually wins this fight, it'll be by knockout. And I don't know. I could... The crowd will be small enough that I don't think anything crazy will happen because those tickets are going to be so expensive that you're not going to get the every man, common man, Irishman showing up. But there's going to be a lot of Irish people. And if Conor knocks him out, he becomes the greatest combat sports star in the history of the world. He will be the greatest fighter ever. He will be the greatest showman ever. I could see like this riot of joy breaking out. I think the parties will last for months. It'll be something we've never seen before, probably since Ali, and he will maybe arguably reach that level Muhammad Ali. All he has to do is knock out the best fighter of his generation in a sport that he's never done before. So, let's see if that happens.
And, when I heard this fight was finally made official, the very first Mayweather fight that jumped into my mind was the 2011 bout against Victor Ortiz. Do you remember that one?
I do, a little bit, yeah.
Do you think that possibly there could be some similar shenanigans in this fight that, McGregor goes in, he's already making his, $100 million payday, that he might want to go in there and try to do some rabid punching or, go for, some low blows, maybe even get disqualified on purpose?
I don't think he'll get disqualified on purpose, but I definitely think that whether he intentionally fights a little dirty or something happens, he goes into his instinct to fight in a clinch, that might happen. Still, Conor, his entire game in MMA has always been based around not fighting close. It's always been a very distance-based game. I don't think he's going to do anything stupid, and if anything, I think that might actually hurt him. Because I think that when he's had years, a decade at least, I think, of training primarily MMA. Even with boxing, it's always been MMA distance with kicks involved a little bit. He's going to be thinking more than Mayweather will. He's going to have to think, don't throw the kick right here. Even if it's just a little jabbing front kick to find his distance, he has to think about that, and Mayweather doesn't. And I think that might mess with him. I don't think it matters. I think McGregor can go out there and short of a sucker punch where he kicks Mayweather in the head, it doesn't matter. This is the greatest boxer of this generation against a guy who's never boxed in his life. It's a different sport. Again, I'll go back to Michael Jordan facing Roger Clemens in an All-Star game. It's just not going to happen. I will get sucked into it. I know I will. Mayweather and can talk it up. McGregor can clearly talk it up. I will see him outboxing most guys his size in MMA. Nate was tough, but also keep in mind, he pretty much schooled Nate early on in both those fights until he got tired, and Nate's kind of a freak as far as size and reach is concerned. But it's Floyd Mayweather. He's fought guys who are just as dangerous in all the areas Conor is, but who are also, real boxers and made him look stupid. So the logic just says this is a rout and everybody will pay $100 and it'll probably last 3 or 4 rounds if that, and we'll all walk away going, oh, great, that was nothing.
Chuck Webner did knock down Muhammad Ali. Stranger things, nothing stranger than McGregor winning this fight, whatever happened.
Plus, Webner also lost.
Yes, he did. But he did have Rocky created in his own image, so maybe, McGregor get that cinematic treatment himself someday.
I guess if his goal is to inspire the next odd actor who somehow captures one moment in time to get himself an Academy Award nomination and then parlay that into a career of using steroids and beating up the Viet Cong, then yeah, I guess Conor's got a future.
That is inspiring words right there. That gets me motivated. And speaking of McGregor, what do you think his next move will be, win or lose? Does he go back to the UFC? Does he keep kind of tooling around in boxing? Does he try to get, heaven help us, a rematch against Mayweather?
It probably just depends on how well he does in losing. Obviously, if he wins, if you're Conor McGregor and you win, you're done. You retire, you've got all the money you can need, the greatest legacy ever. You have nothing to gain. You can never be bigger than you are. Two division champion in the UFC at the same time, and then beating the greatest boxer of your generation. You can, outside of deciding, you know what, I'm going to go into the Olympics and do some wrestling and try to win a gold medal. I don't know what else he could do to round out his resume. If he loses, again, he still may just retire and say, hey, I got like a 37-figure payday here, people. I don't care anymore. Or he'll take, you know, 6 months off, maybe 9 months, maybe a year, and come back. And he's got money fights out the wazoo. He can fight Nate Diaz tomorrow and have 1.5 million buys. He can fight Tony Ferguson and do 1 million buys. You know, we've seen in MMA in particular that it takes a lot for guys to lose their drawing power. Chuck Liddell was at the very end when he fought Rich Franklin, he still did 600,000 buys. And Conor is bigger than Chuck ever was. So, you know, if he wants to fight, he could fight, make a lot of money. I think that he probably will, because money is a drug and fame is a drug. And once you get hooked on that, it takes a long time to kick that monkey off your shoulder. So I don't think this August will be the last time we see Conor McGregor putting on some sort of leather on his hands.
Oh, you mean he's not even going to try to challenge Tyson Fury in an open weight match?
Hey, you know what? If the money's ready to do it. I mean, Conor's about the money, and somehow we would all talk ourselves into the idea of, well, you know what? He's quicker, and he's had the experience now, and Tyson's kind of fat, and then there would be the reality of, you know, a glorified midget fighting a heavyweight, and then you get killed. So, you know, I don't know, maybe it's like John Jones or George St. Pierre. It could be George St. Pierre. It could be anything. Conor is different than any other fighter in MMA history. He is truly beyond the system that's been created. It's a great system. I love the system. It's produced great stars and amazing pay-per-views. He is somebody that can fight for nothing but these crazy freak show fights, and we will all buy it.
And what do you think is going to be the big corollary impact of this match on both boxing and MMA? Who's going to have the bigger upswing as far as business goes after this fight?
If Conor wins, MMA has an upswing. If he loses, then nobody gains anything. Boxing has systemic issues that they cannot address. They are so desperate in that they have no ability to really make real stars. They get lucky here and there, but there's so many promoters and so many promotions and so many cable companies involved where guys don't find each other. Yeah, Triple G and Golovkin, he's like in his mid-30s, and he can't get the big, big fights until maybe just now. Whereas in the UFC, Conor's not even 30, and he's had multiple gigantic fights. I would say MMA should be okay, but the way this new UFC ownership is going with all their crazy interim titles and everything, I don't know. I still think the sport has this more centralized structure that helps it develop stars in the future, whereas boxing doesn't. I think this could probably just end up being a one-off thing where we all look at it and go, wow, that's a crazy weekend, and then we go back to life.
And how do you see the fight playing out? You know, how many rounds does this thing last, and if you had to bet your entire savings account on it, what's the outcome?
I would bet all of my money, my mother's money, my dog, my brother, several children that I own in Papua New Guinea on Floyd Mayweather winning by knockout. Maybe not the first round, but if it lasts more than 3 rounds, I would be surprised. If it goes 12, that's a huge victory for Conor. Obviously, we talked before, Conor can always land one big punch. I think that'll be his game plan. He'll be very patient. It'll be interesting because Floyd is a counterpuncher, as you mentioned earlier, the ultimate counterpuncher, and so is Conor. And Conor is very, very patient. He's good at finding his distance. This is a new kind of distance, though. But I think Floyd will just, you know, Conor can probably throw that straight left. He likes to lead with it. Floyd will just slip it and counter, slip it and counter. He's going to make Conor look stupid. Because, again, he's made the best boxers of his generation look stupid. And Conor is not a boxer. He's a mixed martial artist. It's a totally different sport. So I think Floyd I mean, I don't think it'll be end in the first or second round just because I think Connor has good enough chin and his size. Like, I think people will be surprised how much bigger Connor is. Floyd is the kind of guy that they're fighting 154. He has to come up to 154, and he doesn't have any weight. He has to put on size. Connor will probably enter the ring with at least a 20-pound weight advantage, and I think that alone will let him survive a little bit. But I bet Floyd just digs the body, and if it goes more than three rounds, I'll be surprised. And I think that Floyd finishes it maybe in the third or fourth round with probably a body shot that hurts Connor and drops him.
And currently the all-time pay-per-view champion is the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. Did close to about 5 million buys. How many buys did this event do?
When I first heard about the fight, I wasn't really sure because I think Floyd and Pacquiao was 4.6 million. You never really know with these buys, but whatever. It's 4-plus million. After just a couple days, like a week of build, I'm already thinking this thing will surpass that with ease. I think this thing could close in on 6 million buys. There's just so much talk about it. It's the summer. There are no major sports going on right now. It's just going to be baseball, and it's just going to be that boring lull of baseball where, you know, things are just kind of going along. The World Series will be at least 2 months away. The NFL will kind of be starting up, but basketball won't be there. Hockey won't be there. Tennis, nobody cares about. Soccer, there's nothing major. There's no World Cup. And people are just going to be, I think, especially with the political environment we live in right now, people are going to be so desperate for some sort of escape. And I think I mentioned it on the last MMA and stuff at AskGarden.com with Matt Grady that really the only thing that can derail this fight is if Donald Trump does something crazy via Twitter that weekend. And he very may well. I mean, Trump is Trump. Otherwise, this thing was just going to be gigantic. We all need something to get away from the real world, and this is the ultimate. With months of passionate MMA fans, passionate boxers, hot takes galore. You're going to have all these guys who don't know anything like Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith? I don't know what his last name is. Stephen A. We're just going to act like they're experts and they're going to talk it up. And Connor's going to do something, say something, and Floyd will. It's a perfect storm at the right time, right place, and it's going to be something huge.
Yeah, and even if the fight itself is a dud, I mean, we at least have 2 months of what's going to be, without question, the greatest trash talk in the history of humanity. So that is more than enough reason for this fight to happen to me.
Yeah, I mean, I said it earlier, this is all sizzle, no steak, but guess what? You buy sizzle, you don't buy steak. You buy steak the second or third time, but for a one-off, everybody buys the sizzle. And this is going to be sizzling like it's from Sizzler in the 1992.
That was a very good year for Sizzler. I recall that quite vividly.
They had a great commercial where they were proud to be American. And, I love all unique buffets. What can I say? I'm an American. We love to just gorge ourselves and be fat bastards.
And Fat Bastard, of course, is from Scotland, which is close to Ireland, so it kind of connects.
Sure, I'll go with that, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they don't have any food in Africa. So that's another angle.
You beat me to it again, always. So, yeah, what are your plans for August 26th? I mean, if there were ever a weekend for you to go full Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, this would be it. So, you making it to Nevada that weekend?
I will apply for press credentials. I will not receive them. But if I do, yes, I will be there. Otherwise, I ain't going there. Vegas is, I'm too old in some respects. Like, I don't know, I'm also too cheap to spend the kind of money you need to spend to have a lot of fun in Vegas. Like, I'm just like, I'm old enough now, I think, you know what, get me like 4 or 5 drinks in, I can sit on a couch and have just as much fun, because I'm going to be drunk, I don't care. And there's so many weirdos that show up in Vegas, and I don't want to deal with all that crap. So I will probably be watching this at home with my one remaining puggle.
Ah, yes. Do you want to talk about the rally puggle and the loss? No, that's the big thing that happened in the summer.
I will talk about anything. I'll never shut up. But yes, I put down my the rally puggle. I have two dogs, two puggles. One of them is a normal dog, Sam, who's sleeping right now. The other one was Mickey, who was more than just a dog. He was my shadow. He was the great, consistent presence in my life for 9 years. He just got sick, and within about 4 days later, we had to put him down. It's awful. I miss him. I'll probably end up writing something great that everybody goes, oh, that's really wonderful about it. And I would trade anything to have him back. But, you know, that's, sadly, that's life now. I mean, I guess it's a blessing in that I've been through a lot of real crap circumstances. So I know it doesn't matter how bad it is, I can get through things. And so I guess it doesn't affect me as much as it might have at one point. And, you know, such is life, I guess, you know. We all die, we all live, and he had a good life with me, and I'm really grateful for him, and hopefully I can explode his death with some great writing one day.
It's not going to be the same baseball season without seeing his face on your Facebook feed.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't have mattered anyway with the way the Giants are playing right now. Good gosh. I think the Giants killed him with their poor performance. I'm not going to lie.
I'm going to keep my Bichon or Lock and Key until the Raiders season is over, just to be safe.
Hey, it's going to be a Vegas dog pretty soon there.
Oh, it is. Oh. You know, all these signs, I think, are kind of like pinpointing that I should actually move to Nevada and just get a job working like a CC's buffet.
You know, I mean, there are worse things to do in life, especially if you're a degenerate and you don't really care about the future. Vegas is a great place to go and just, you know, flame out. We all saw leaving Las Vegas. That's probably the best case scenario for me.
Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be a tragedy, but I found it oddly inspiring.
I have always been drawn towards people that are comfortable giving up in a dramatic manner. And no, it's not for everybody. And yes, there are people that have, you know, normal lives, but I kind of have almost come to terms with the idea that because I don't have the normal obligations of people who are 34 years old, you know, wife and kids and all that, it gives me the freedom to pursue what I would call, like, you know, objective truths without worrying about repercussions. I can take stances that other people can't because anything can happen to me. I can just go bag groceries for a living and be, all right, I'm fine with that. You know, if you have a wife and kids, yeah, you gotta eat crap from people. You got to do what your boss says, and I get that. But since I don't, I almost feel like there's an obligation to do what they can't.
And, of course, the other big thing going on in your life, you just wrapped up the Yale's Writers Conference. You got a big update for us. Would you like to break the news here, Mr. Coughlin?
Well, the Writers Conference is over. I did my my 2-plus weeks there. It was a very successful endeavor for myself. I learned a lot. I threw myself into everything. I read some fantastic writers from Joan Didion to Mara Altman to Nora Ephron and so on. And I understood they all had a political view that was different than mine, but I thought that was the great strength I had, which is because I didn't agree with people politically, I could focus on their work. And I thought that made me stronger. It gave me more insight. And as I've mentioned to you off air a little bit there, it all culminated with me receiving an email that at least one person there, anonymously, of course it's anonymously, believed me to be a white supremacist.
It took them that long?
I was surprised it took that long. That said, it was kind of weird because I follow, you know, a lot of politics. I've been seeing what's happened to Jordan Peterson up in Toronto and Milo, the provocateur that he is out in Berkeley and stuff like that, where there seems to be this, sorry people, but it's political, this radical left that is really intolerant as hell. I mean, they are genuine Nazis. They really are. If you think of what Nazis started, Nazis were a movement where one group said, that group has power and we will stop them. It was a social justice movement. And I saw what happened to the gentleman up at Evergreen State in Washington, where he simply said, I don't think it's a good idea to have a day where white people aren't allowed to come to campus. And he's now a racist. And I see these things and I'm like, wow, that's really crazy. Because I've been out of undergrad for over a decade. And yeah, I got a lot of crap back then because I was right to center. And I knew some of the professors would call me more than other people and challenge me. But it was okay because I thought, you know, iron sharpens iron. I was stronger for it. I never really took it personally. I thought it was all good fun. And now there's this crazy movement where people are genuinely intolerant of ideas. And when I was, you know, got the word that somebody thought I was a white supremacist, I was just stunned. I just laughed at it all. And I find it to just be hilarious. And again, if I had a wife and kids, I'd be scared. But since I don't, I'm gonna come right back at them and stick it to them.
That's what we all hoped you would do, Mike.
Yeah, and the funniest thing of all, and these are the two things, there are two, apparently two things from my Facebook that indicated I was a white supremacist. One of them is that out of the 905 things I have clicked like on Facebook, one of them was the Proud Boys movement started by Gavin McGinnis, who, you know, I interviewed last year. Keep in mind that I also like groups such as I Jerk Off in My Own Coffee, and a number of other crazy dumb things. So I just click like on a lot of stuff because that's how you see stuff pop up in your feed. And also, one of my numerous job titles and educational backgrounds. And keep in mind, on Facebook it says I studied at the Professor Xavier School for Mutants. I studied at the Avengers Academy. I've had a number of jobs. I've been a bear at a courtroom, a resident sociopath. And one of my other jobs was chairman of the nonpartisan Anti-Chinese League, a reference to the great movie Tombstone. And that was one of the things used to call me a white supremacist.
Just for quoting Tombstone.
Yeah, because I found the squirrely guy in Tombstone who said all this stuff. If somebody saw that, and that was enough, that combined with the clicking like on something once, made me a white supremacist.
Well, I like the fact that it's totally not at all Orwellian, that they're just, you know, skimming your Facebook feed to find any sort of, you know, thing to use against you.
Oh, yeah, that's what I thought. I'm like, somebody went out of their way, because I'm sure I said something to somebody somewhere that they didn't appreciate, and they thought, oh, he must be one of those, and they were looking for something. Because there's so much stupid stuff that I've clicked like on Facebook. Some of it's just for promotional purposes, for half-guarded. I have all these, like, pro-Muslim, anti-Muslim, pro-Jewish, anti-Muslim, anti-Jewish, pro-Christian, anti-Christian, pro-left, pro-right, anti-left, anti-right groups. I clicked like on a lot of stuff because I think it's kind of fun to see what's going on out there. So somebody went out of their way to find one thing that they could call me a racist for, and then they went with a quote. And so they had to look at it, and they had to see the words chairman of the nonpartisan Anti-Chinese League, and they had choices. They could read that and go, huh, I don't know what that is. Is that real? And just Google it. If you Google it, everything that pops up is from the movie Tombstone. Or they had to think, wow, Yale admitted somebody who is so blatantly racist, but only against Chinese people, not Asians, not Japanese, not Vietnamese, not Koreans, just Chinese, that I was proud of it, even though nobody else belonged to this group. And they went with the absolute worst-case scenario. They were looking for a reason to be offended. And I just laugh at it. It's sad, because it'll probably hurt me if I want to get an MFA. I can't take it down because I'm stubborn like that. But it's just incredible how in the bubble and intolerant people can be. And it's scary because, as I say a lot, this doesn't happen at Oral Roberts University. You're not seeing this on the crazy right-wing groups. And some of those universities, the right-wing universities, they would call me a leftist. I know they would. I know that the Proud Boys had like a private Facebook group, and they kicked me out. They thought I was a leftist just because I questioned one or two things here and there. And it's like if you have anything, any opinion that slightly deviates from the in-group's accepted norm, everybody runs right to the extreme. And it's just, it's crazy. And all I can do is laugh at it, but I laugh in the same way that Abraham Lincoln once said, I laugh because I cannot cry. And that's all I can do right now.
You know, it's an amazing time we're living in. One of the things I want to do with this channel, this particular radio program, is kind of dwell into more political stuff. And one of the topics I want to discuss was, is liberalism officially a religion now?
It's very close to it. It's very close. Sadly, a lot of what I would say the younger left have become incredibly intolerant and borderline, ironically, fascist. You see a lot of old school leftists, like I always look at like Sam Harris, and a leftist atheist, who they now call a right wing fascist. And I look at him, this guy is nothing, he's not even close to a right winger. But because he won't ascribe to the idea that we should have 57 new gender pronouns, he's a fascist. Or if he says, you know, maybe radical Islam is a danger, oh, he's a bigot. And it's really insane.
Well, then there's something to Richard Dawkins.
Which is funny, because even Dawkins, I don't think he'll come around like Harris has. I think he's a little too old and too entrenched. But, yeah, even he gets attacked for it, and it really seems like it's the culmination of identity politics. Like, it's reached its nadir. And I saw, like, up in, I think it was Vancouver, where the Black Lives Matter protested the gay pride parade, because the gay pride parade would have cops marching in it, and the Black Lives Matter group didn't like that. And so they're cannibalizing themselves. I worry that the right will do the same thing, because right now it's easy. Anytime you have like a quote-unquote enemy to fight against, it's easy to be unified. But once you have a little bit of power, suddenly you're going to probably see traditional right-wing conservatives who are religiously based fighting with the non-religious libertarian wing. And it'll fight itself. Like there's probably a place for about four or five political parties in the United States. But for right now, it's really stunning how just absolutely just bonkers this shit has gotten. And it's been a real quick development within the past, I'll just say during Obama's term. I don't know if it's really his fault, but it seems to be during his term where all this stuff really ramped up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a really recent phenomenon. I graduated in 2012. Campus life was nothing like that. It was still very individualist-centric. So, I mean, it's been a phenomenon in the last four, maybe even 3 years. This became a mainstream thing.
Yeah, I saw this video, again, going back to the Professor Evergreen State, and the students were talking about how I don't support free speech if it means I get hurt. And their idea, but their definition of being hurt is so esoteric that they can claim anything is harmful to them. And we see people who genuinely advocate against free speech. Like, what is going on? Freedom of speech is the single most important value of all of them. It trumps guns. It trumps the right to a fair trial. It trumps religious freedom. Free speech, the ability to freely express ideas, is the only thing that really matters, and people are comfortable saying that they don't like that. That's insanity. Who could possibly do that? It's this reverse tautology, and I don't even know what to do with that. So, I guess I'm lucky because no wife, no kids anymore. None of that stuff's going to hold me back. I'm not going to have it in the future. I don't want to be too full of myself because I'm also a lazy drunk, but I like to hope that maybe I can give comfort to the one girl I saw there at Evergreen State who said, I don't want to say my last name because I have nuanced opinions on certain issues, and if I do, they might try to run me out of this campus, and that's insane.
That perfectly epitomizes, I think, the current political climate in the U.S. I have nuanced views, therefore I fear for my life.
Yeah, it's funny because, the past couple of weeks I would sit there and I felt like I had an obligation to just be, I don't say confrontational, but willing to explain views that I suspected a lot of people didn't hear. So I would I would challenge people on any pro-choice view, pro-gay marriage, whatever it was. And it occurred to me, they really had not heard anything. They'd never heard a dissenting opinion. And all they could do is spew the word patriarchy over and over again, to the point where I almost started to laugh at it. But they didn't understand the concept of logic. And not that every right-wing position is logical. It's not. There are you can come to a logical conclusion from the right or the left, but a lot of people have just been raised on buzzwords. And that's really weird. They don't want to debate. They've made up their mind that this is what it is. Anybody who says anything different isn't just wrong, they're evil. And when you think somebody else is evil, it's really easy to then leap to, it's okay to, kill them. It's okay to shoot them, stab them, whatever it may be. And I think that's a big difference between the left and the right, because the right has been used to being challenged forever, especially in an academic environment. Like, nobody who's right-wing pretty much went through college without being challenged. Again, let's go to Oral Roberts University or whatever it may be. And so you understand, hey, I like that guy. That's a really good guy. He has a disagreement with me on how things should work, but he's a good dude. And so we don't view the other side as evil. But so many of these kids are being brought up with the idea that if somebody opposes you, they hate you, and they think they're a Nazi. And what do you do if you face a Nazi? You kill Nazis. That makes sense. Of course you kill a Nazi. Why wouldn't you kill a Nazi? I'd kill Hitler if I could. But they haven't gone past, the first step of, this is my emotion. And so all they do is react on emotion. It's really, I can't say it's unprecedented, because, I bet they thought the same thing in the 60s and 70s or whatever, but it certainly seems like it's a dangerous precedent that's being set right now.
And this is a topic we're definitely going to have to explore a little bit more in depth in the future. And I'm only assuming that people watching this video or, listen to the audio online are wondering, how did we go from talking about Mayweather and McGregor to the campus climate's leftist takeover of academia? But
it's very simple. Sean King, the white guy that pretends to be black, who sometimes writes for the New York Post, for whatever reason, wrote a column calling Conor McGregor a racist because of some things he said about Jose Aldo, who is also not black or white, and therefore it all gets connected with intersectionality, the idea that, basically everything that's not a white man is good and all white men are evil.
Wait a minute, didn't the Brazilians import, 5 million African-American slaves during the Atlantic slave trade compared to, 50,000 by the U.S., 500,000?
No, that's just your white, cisgendered male patriarchy thinking that leads you to believe that. Facts don't matter in this world.
I always forget that.
Yeah, I know. It's a pain in the ass to have facts and logic and all that. And, it's one of the things I've always wanted to do, which is, to go on a show like Louder with Crowder or any of the right-wing shows and try to see how well I can argue the left-wing point of view. Because I think they have a lot of valid points, but nobody's doing it. Instead, all they're doing is spouting up. They're like pro wrestlers hitting their high spots and their promos and saying, if you smell what the patriarchy is cooking.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, using their finisher maneuver, Godwin's Law.
Of course, you got to call somebody Hitler at all times.
All right, well, we have so much stuff coming up over the summer. We got UFC 213, UFC 214. We got a Bellator show coming up this weekend nobody cares about, so there's plenty of MMA stuff coming up. And I do want to get into some more political stuff with you over the summer, so would you be keen on coming back to the show?
You know I will. I'll talk about anything, anytime, anywhere.
That's why we love you, Coughlin. All right, we're going to wrap it up real quick. Anything you want to say? Any big projects you got working on, stuff at Half Guarded?
No.
That makes it easy for us. All right. Well, thank you so much for stepping inside the program, Mike, and we'll be hearing from you very shortly.
Thank you, James. Always a big fan.
Oh, it's my pleasure.